From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Let's just say for now that Mormon leaders, like leaders from other churches, have the best intentions when they counsel the young people in their congregations. They want to provide comfort and spiritual guidance, but part of the job of being a Mormon bishop, for example, is making sure young people are not committing moral sins. And that leads to what some observers say is just a bad idea. An adult male, usually not trained, in a room alone with a young girl asking her about sex. As one of our guests on the program today put it, when you have a relationship of trust and power, and then you throw into the mix the most intimate questions possible, it's dangerous, even with the best intentions. There's an online petition that's getting attention these days calling for LDS leaders to stop doing these kinds of interviews, and that's what we're talking about after the news. Hi, it's Doug Fabrizio, and it's time for another screening in our documentary series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Tomorrow night, we're screening filmmaker James Redford's film about renewable energy. Redford went on this quest to learn more about renewable energy, and what he wanted to know was, do we have the capability to replace fossil fuels, and do we have the will? The film is called Happening. Join us at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center tomorrow night at 7. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There's an online petition getting some attention in Mormon circles these days. It was started by an active Latter-day Saint, and the language is pretty deferential. It says right up front the petition is not meant to disparage the church or its leaders in any way. But it's also really clear and pretty assertive. It's asking church leaders to immediately cease a common practice in Mormonism. These are interviews by bishops and other local leaders who ask questions of a sexual nature to children. Now, it's important to say interviews between bishops and young people aren't only about sex. Usually they're about providing spiritual guidance or comfort. They're about church callings or temple worthiness. But at a time when people are raising questions about cultural practices that include this power imbalance, a situation where you have an older man who's not really trained being alone in a room with a child asking about sex, at times without the knowledge of parents, just seems like a really dated and bad idea. And today in the program, we're going to be talking about these bishop interviews and the move to change them, because part of the conversation is just how sensitive these issues can be and just how much training LDS leaders, who are, after all, lay ministers, really have for something like this. We invite you to join us. 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us on the program first is Sam Young. He's a businessman based in Texas. He served as an LDS bishop in the 1990s. He's an active Mormon. And Sam is the one who started this petition. It's called Protect the Children, Stop Sexually Oriented Interviews of Mormon Youth. And he's joining us by phone from his office in Houston. And Sam Young, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, it's a great pleasure. Good to meet you, Doug. I've heard you many times on the radio.
Oh, good. Okay. I guess I want to start by having you tell us what got you thinking about all of this. And a big part of it, as I understand it, is about a year ago, almost a year ago now, you were talking to a friend and he told you this story, and it really sort of knocked you for a loop.
Yes. So this friend hadn't been to church in, 10 years. And he sat me down and said, Sam, I think it's time I tell you why I quit going to church. My son had an interview. He was nervous. I sat outside, and I told him, look, don't worry about it. I'll just sit on the couch. If you are concerned, I'll just come out. He came out right after the interview started, white as a ghost. Said, Dad, the bishop asked me if I masturbate and if I have sex with other boys. My friend stood up, walked into that bishop's office, and said, if you ever ask my sons a question like that again, I will beat you to a pulp. That made a huge impression on me from two standpoints. One, how common is this in the church? And two, here was a man, a dad like me, that was there when his son was asked these probing questions. I didn't know if my kids were ever asked questions like that. So that's what got me interested in it. I then put out just a question on Facebook, is this happening? I got a flood of responses. Today, I've read over 1,000 stories of mostly adults that when they were kids, they felt that they were damaged in the ways that the petition describes, and sharing their stories of how they had the problems that they had had as a result of these probing interviews. Now, what really got me going fast was when I asked my daughter a few months ago, who was living with me at the time, honey, have you ever been asked this question? Now, this was 14 years previous.
Yeah.
So she immediately remembered that interview and said, yeah, Dad, when I was 12, the bishop asked me if I masturbated. I didn't know what that meant. I went to my friends. They didn't know what it meant, so I Googled it. And, Dad, I found out how what masturbation was, and I found pornography. I asked, did that ever happen again? She said, oh, yeah, all through my teenage years. She said all the time.
All the time, you mean in terms of being asked about that question? By leaders.
Ask if she masturbated. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That question was asked all during her youth experience from 12 to age 17. And that's when I realized it's common and it happened to my own kids and I wasn't there to stand up and walk in and tell the bishop, never talk to my children about this. That is our business.
But how does that happen? You are a bishop. You weren't asking these questions. Why are some of these other bishops asking that particular question or these questions in general?
Well, that's a really good question, and that's, Doug, that's one of the problems we have. We don't have the transparency to know what the instructions are that have been given to bishops to start this ball rolling. When I was a kid, I was never asked by a bishop any of these questions, but I know people my age, I'm 65, that were asked these questions. So when I was a bishop, that was 20 years ago, I never asked any of these questions. I never received training to ask these questions. Why would it ever pop into anybody's head, ooh, I think I'm going to ask this 12-year-old girl if she touches herself between her legs? I mean, that is gross. Why would that? So I didn't, but I now I don't know where it came from. I would like to know where it came from.
Yeah. Well, I guess that is the question. Where does it come from? Like, is there so there's not a document, what you're saying, an official document that says you should be probing, you should ask particular questions, you really want to get at this idea of sexual morality, so you should define what it is and find out what it is? I mean, there's not a document that lays this out, is what you're saying, I guess.
Well, in Handbook 1,
explain what that is, Sam, because some people are not going to know what Handbook 1 is.
Okay, so the church has a set of directions and policies that are instructions that are given to bishops and stake presidents and the general authorities. Handbook 1 this is a problem with our transparency again. It is not available to the church members. We don't even know what the policies are that govern our own church. For some reason, they don't feel... For some reason, they've made the decision that the members should not know how the church is operated. But that document is available. The church made a mistake, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and they made that document public for a few hours. Well, you know what? That was downloaded. I've now read the entire thing and read everything it has to say about the interviews. It doesn't give direction to be explicit and specific, but it sets no limits on it. It references that you should talk about the law of chastity, and you can use, and it gives you a couple resources that are public, like For the Strength of Youth. So there it does have some explicit things in there. It references something that most people would interpret as masturbation. So it has those things, but when I read through it, the one thing that I noted was it sets no limits whatsoever. Yesterday, the church, or the day before, released a statement responding to the petition, mm-hmm. and that it was also something glaring to me. There are no restrictions on what that bishop can ask, and there's certainly no instructions on how to do it that I'm aware of.
It's interesting, the how much the parents are involved. You mentioned this church statement they send us, what I'm guessing is the same kind of statement where they responded to how this works. The LDS statement says this: when a young person is faced with serious sin or temptation, a bishop will likely encourage them to share, as appropriate, their struggles with their parents. That seems weird to me. That wouldn't the parent be the first person that is dealing with all of this? I don't understand what that means and how it gets at the question, how much do parents know and what does the church think about the role of the parent in those questions?
Well, and I can't speak for the church.
Of course.
I can only speak for me and about 75 other people that have signed the petition. And I know there's a whole bunch more. But speaking for me, I don't want the church involved in certain things. I want the church involved in, I want the bishop involved in a meeting with my child, with me present, that's uplifting, that where you discuss coming to Christ and how you can build that spiritual relationship with our Heavenly Father, as opposed to, and by the way, do you masturbate? Once that is said, the kid forgets all the rest of that stuff. And I believe the as a parent, if I was to do it again, I would want to be actively involved in everything. If there is going to be an interview with my child, I'm going to be there every single time because it's my responsibility to parent the child, not the bishop's. And the we've gone awry so much. I mean, we've hurt so many kids with regards to talking about sexual matters in an untrained manner that I don't think it should ever be brought up. That should be, if the bishop wants to know if my 12-year-old is, my 12-year-old boy, my 11-year-old boy, is worthy to be advanced in the priesthood, I can make that statement. I'll handle that with my own child. I can make that statement to him. Or he can ask my child other questions, just not, they're in my presence, just not about sex. My responsibility as a parent is the development of my children in every way, including their sexual growth and development.
There's a, I should mention, there's a document that was released by Mormon Leaks. Some of you may or may not know Mormon Leaks. It's a group that obtains and publishes internal LDS Church documents. The document that they leaked, these are minutes from this this council meeting. It was presided over by a general authority. And in this meeting, this was February of last year, this was a discussion had by a general authority to mission presidents. And they were discussing these changes to the missionary application. And this is what they said about worthiness interviews. They said, and I'll just quote it here, worthiness interviews need to be specific and explicit. For example, not just do you live the law of chastity. So at least in this particular case, they're asking you to get specific.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we should just point that out. Do you think there's a mixed message going on? I mean, is that the general tenor of from leaders that they're being told to get specific? I don't know. It's hard to say.
Well, see, that would be a question for the church.
Yeah.
What are we telling the bishops? Because some bishops, many bishops, are super explicit, and many bishops are not.
Let me ask you what you're expecting, I guess, from this petition. You go through the lists, the risks, shame and guilt and self-loathing and attempted suicide or suicide and, as you put it in the petition, normalizing children to sexual questions by adult men. You say among the list, the risks are impaired sexual relations after marriage, those kinds of things. I'm wondering what you're expecting from church leaders and if you've heard from them at all, because you're pretty explicit. You're asking church leaders to immediately cease this practice.
Yeah. See, all those risks on that list, they're not just risks. They have happened. They're happening right now. The interview process, it will be changed. There's no way that the church is going to want the huge black eye of it being made super public that the missionaries are talking to me. I know what happens behind closed doors in the Mormon church. They take children behind those closed doors, 12 years old, and ask the girls, do you touch yourself between your legs? There's no way that is going to continue. But will it take a year? Will it take 5 years? Will it take 10 years? I don't know how long it'll take to change or to figure out what to do. And that's why I'm saying this coming Sunday, more kids are going to be damaged by these interviews. Let's stop it right now and then figure out what we're going to do. But that's why I'm calling for, we got to stop it immediately. We're not going to talk about this for 20 years. So here's, what do I expect from the petition? What I would like to have from the petition is different than what I expect and know will happen from the petition. What I'd like to have happen is for the church to recognize that, ooh, there is a big problem here, we need to address it. That's what I'd like to happen. They might do that. But what I know it is affecting is it's bringing awareness that this issue is out there. There have been many parents now that have said, I am not going to allow this to happen to my children. If you look at comments on the petition, there's many of them that said, I am an active member of the church. I will not permit this to go on any longer. I'm an active member of the church. I'm going to be in every single one of my children's interviews, and we're not going to talk about sex with a bishop. I mean, so if there's one kid that doesn't commit suicide because of this, I mean, that's kind of extreme, but how successful was the petition? If there are 100 kids that don't go through the self-loathing process during their wonderful, what should be, our teenage years should be wonderful years. So if there are 100 kids that don't go through that self-loathing, don't take it into their marriage, don't take it into their adulthood. The petition has been a super success, and that's already happened. And then here is the other thing that I didn't know the petition would do. So there's still a lot of people that have this guilt and shame on top of them. They look and see what was done to me was wrong. I wish it had never happened. I don't know how to get rid of this. But I've had many tell me this, Sam, it is part of my healing process. You are helping me heal and put this behind me. Just seeing somebody stand up and say what was done to me was wrong and that it needs to change. That, so we're, this, just the petition itself is helping people heal.
Yeah. Well, Sam Young, I'm grateful you joined us today. Thanks very much. Sam organized the petition aiming to stop sexually oriented interviews of Mormon youth. There's a link to it, by the way, on our website, radiowest.org. Sam joined us today by phone from his office in Houston. Sam, thanks very much.
Thank you, Doug. Best wishes.
You too. Okay, so here, let me read a few comments we're getting. This comes from Julie, who writes, I'm still creeped out by the memory of my LDS bishop asking me if I masturbated or participated in heavy petting and or fornicated. I'm 58 years old, Julie writes, very traumatized by the question still. Seems perverse to have an older man in a room with a young teen asking these questions. By the way, I am no longer a Mormon. Stuart writes this, I went through these so-called interviews 50 years ago, haven't been to church in 47 years. The interview was a big part of that decision. 801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. Let's go to the phones. Mike is with us in Sandy. Mike, welcome.
Hi. Hi. I think this is a very important conversation to have. I am an active member, and I had very explicit, inappropriate things said to me in an interview, and my friends as well, and we got together and talked about it, and we basically came to the same conclusion as your guest, that we needed to tell our kids that when the bishop asks if you're obeying the law of chastity or not, you just say yes or no. And if they want to be specific, to say, I can't talk anymore about this without my parents being present. And I think that's exactly what needs to happen.
And yeah.
I'm glad to hear the conversation happening, because we can't just blindly trust someone else to say and do the right things with our kids. It is our responsibility as parents, ultimately.
Mike, I'm glad you called. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
801-585-WEST, again, the number to join the conversation. Let's bring Kristen Hodson into the conversation. She's a certified sex therapist, founding director of the Healing Group in Salt Lake City. It's a mental health clinic. Also co-author of the book Real Intimacy, written for an LDS audience. She herself is Mormon, and Kristen is joining us again in the studio. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, so from what you're hearing so far, there's so much to take in, so much I have to ask you about. But I want to let me begin with what Mike said. Because it seems like you've done the same thing in your situation. He set a rule. Mm-hmm. He said to his kids, if this comes up, don't take it any further. Don't get specific. Say, I need to be involved. Yours is even more, I think you set a precedent that your kids never meet alone with a bishop mm-hmm. in regards to these kinds of things. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So as our oldest was getting older and he was getting ready to be baptized, and we knew that would be his first interview. And this was actually something my husband and I had talked long about. We thought about this. And that we wanted to set the precedent for all of our children and to make it not a bishop issue. It's our family. It's our family rule. This is the way we do things. And we've had wonderful bishops. It's not necessarily a reflection on the bishop. It's just being smart and preparing and saying there's actually no need for them to meet individually with my children. And we are
so at all. You don't want them meeting individually at all.
No. And yeah. if our kids say, you know what? Because you have the spiritual stewardship, they may get to a point where they're like, I want to go seek some counsel. I love what this caller said here of then providing the skills of, look, here are the bounds in which these conversations can be navigated, because I still work with adults that don't know how to navigate these, especially when you're dealing with children. With a person in a position of power, they're not going to know what are the bounds and limits and is this okay? This feels off that he's asking me this, but I trust him because he's the bishop. And
that, talk about a power imbalance.
Yes. So we just set the precedent. In fact, our interview with our son was actually held in our home. And we were just there to make it a wonderful experience. And so now we can simply say, oh, it's not you, Bishop. This is the way that we do this in our home for our family. It's a matter of safety, because nowhere in the church they go to great lengths to not have adults be alone with youth. And so
Wait. Underline that, because I think this is important. This is a weird exception because you've pointed this out. The church is assiduous about making sure adults are not alone with young people, except for this thing.
The greatest position of power in a ward. And I know there are bishops that are mindful of this. And they too, as I've talked with different ones, are like, it's not a terribly comfortable situation for me either. And so I know some go to great lengths to leave doors open, to make sure people are present. And I do know this is happening. However, to Sam Young's point, I don't know if there are formal trainings, policies, procedures, how to set this up and to really be thoughtful and proactive about changing this practice.
Let's go back to the phones. 801-585-WEST is the number. Christine is joining us from Salt Lake. Christine, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
All right. So to hear this conversation, especially with kind of what I went through as a youth, you know, I was LDS, I had sex, you know, before I was supposed to, if you will. And I actually went through a series of 5 different bishops because I kept dating and I moved because of school and whatnot. And it was a pretty brutal experience. I had 5 different times. I had to talk to 5 different men about whatever sexual thing I had going on. And I was trying to be good. Otherwise, why would I go talk to them again, right? One of the last times, I had to talk to 5 different men. I forget what they call it, but I had like state president and the bishop and all the people there asking me all kinds of questions. At one point, I had one bishop tell me that I had had sex more than some men that had been married for 30 years. So it was pretty awful, really. I mean, I'm not LDS anymore, and I look back on it, and it's honestly kind of upsetting how I had to talk to these men in these horrible situations that I was just told was the right thing to do. It kind of forever scars you in a perception of, you know, what sex is and who is appropriate to talk to and how private is that type of information.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you called. Thanks very much. Kristen, let me ask you about this. It seems obvious, I guess, but what is wrong with this? What is wrong with this idea of an adult male in a room alone with a 14-year-old girl who has, in some cases, no idea about sex or has questions about it? asking these questions. What's wrong with that? And how damaging can that be?
It can be. I mean, to that caller, I keep hearing just you're just talking to men and men and men. And just the power, just I'll underscore the power imbalance. That's a really uncomfortable and inappropriate situation where in no way, shape or form, the person of power is controlling that situation. But I also want to bring up something. At what point do we start accepting that masturbation is developmentally normal and that actually doesn't need to be – like at what point do we start talking about what is normal development? And
But wait. What – that's such an important question. What would a conventional mainstream bishop say about that question? Is masturbation a sin?
That's a great question.
And is it?
It is, because I think what's interesting for the Four Strength of Youth, latest edition, that word is not in there.
There's this
pamphlet. And it's the guiding morals and principles for the youth within the Mormon Church. Masturbation has historically been a part of it, and current edition, that one word is not. You can talk implication of, well, it's implied in different things. However, I think this whole idea of a masturbation and sexual health and what is normal development and doing these trainings and acknowledging that sex isn't just a moral issue. As I ask different people, is sex a health issue or is it a moral issue? And for some reason, sex is still put in a moral issue. And Elder Ballard, there was recently, he's a leader in the church. He recently just said, I am a general authority, but that doesn't make me an authority in general. If you have a question that requires an expert, please take the time to find an expert to help you. Are these bishops experts in the area of sexual health and navigating these waters when even most mental health professionals don't know how to conduct this?
Yeah. So the answer is to you, it's no, of course not. They don't have the right training. They don't know how to deal with these questions. And first of all, most of them think that masturbation is in fact a sin, right?
And that's the thing. At what point do we start tackling that issue? Because Sam Young's petition, we're explicitly talking about masturbation. We are talking about power dynamics. We're talking about this, but it seems to be, where is the room for normal sexual development between 12 and 18 before you are married? And once you hit puberty, where does this fall? It seems to be a big black hole that you're just suppressing, and yet we're asking about it. It's an odd practice.
Can I just mention the comment that Christine said of one of her leaders who said that she had had more sex than most married men, which is just a doofus thing to say. But how do you account for when you have a doofus and when you don't? I mean, it's just a stupid, clumsy, horrible thing to say. But this gets us to this question of what you hear Mormons refer to as the kind of leadership roulette. Sometimes you get a good one, sometimes you just don't. I guess that's part of the dynamic.
And if we're not doing trainings, what are the questions that are appropriate? How do we mitigate the clumsy maneuvers? When do we say, I'm out of my depth? These are the clear boundaries in which I can practice. I'm a spiritual. My job is to help with the spiritual health. This is out of my realm. To another caller of, Are you abiding by the law of chastity? Adults get to decide that for themselves. So let's empower and teach the kids even what chastity is.
Say that again, because I think that's important. So if you're an adult and you go into a leadership interview, they'll ask you whether you're obeying what the law of chastity, I guess it is, and you can just say yes or no. You don't have to get specific. But kids do?
Well, and this is where, again, I think it's different if you say no. If you're saying no, then it can open up a whole can of words, because I don't know if it just is left at no. Like, okay, it's so now what? What are the next steps if someone says no? What are my next moves? And I don't believe there's clear and concise direction around that.
801-585 West is the number to join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones and hear from Mark. Mark, are you with us?
I am.
Brilliant. Yes. Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. So I just wanted to comment that when I was a teenager, which was many years ago, I had those interviews, and I always thought they were handled just fine. On an occasion, I was asked that question, and I had to answer, you know, and the question is, I mean, the real question, even though I don't know if this is literally what was asked, but are you morally worthy to be advanced in the priesthood, for example, then I think that's a valid question. And if the answer is no, or if you're asked a more specific question, in my case, it was asked and I addressed it and we discussed it briefly and it was never brought up again. And the answer was that I was working, I had resolved it, and as far as the bishop was concerned, together we had resolved it and we moved on. And it never came up again. So I think it was handled very appropriately when I was a teenager.
Yeah. I guess, Kristen, that's an important point to make, is some guys are doing it right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The problem is there doesn't seem like there's a system to make it consistently done
right,
right is
and
what
I,
you're saying.
I do want to underscore there are bishops that are working hard to do it right and to do it well. And that does matter. And you hear all these stories where it's not going well.
It's interesting. It seems like there's a theme coming through, at least in some of the questions that we're getting. This is from Peter, who mentions it's not just a bishop. It was, in my case, it was a first counselor that asked me about touching myself. And he was my uncle. Wow. There's a lot there. This exact experience did not feel right and was a big part of my decision to leave the church. That seems like the theme. A lot of people where this seems like the thing that's propelling them out of the church in some ways. Here's one from Karen. She says, I remember these kinds of interview questions vividly. I thought they were pretty kinky at the time. The bishop asking me as a pretty teenager if I let boys touch me, even though my answer was no, the question seemed weird and set up a situation that was perverse. There's this kind of theme where they just keep probing, and in some cases it provides the motivation for people to leave the church. And I'm guessing you think that's kind of a sad thing.
I do, and I understand. And I saw an interesting idea on this around informed consent for these interviews. There is a lack of transparency that Sam Young spoke to of what is going to be asked specifically. And I'm saying yes to this. This is what I'm participating in with this worthiness interview. I think the idea of having a lot more transparency and the training is a really interesting idea so that all parties involved know what they're getting into and what the limits and bounds are for this interaction.
801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Kristen Hodson is with us, an LDS therapist, director of the Healing Group in Salt Lake City, co-author of the book Real Intimacy. We'll take a quick break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, there's been a lot of talk lately about these interviews in the LDS Church between adult men, you know, leaders and bishops, and young people, young girls, young boys. Sometimes the interviews are for comfort and counsel, as we've been pointing out, but sometimes they're about sexual morality, and so the questions can get pretty specific. And part of the question here, and this is a question asked in the petition, is whether or not these leaders have the training to really deal with these questions and if they should be asking these questions at all. Kristen Hodson is joining us, a certified sex therapist, director of the Healing Group in Salt Lake City. Joining us on the program now is also Patrick Mason. He's an historian and the Howard W. Hunter Chair of Mormon Studies at Claremont Graduate University in California. He's also a member of the LDS Church. His latest book is What is Mormonism? A Student's Introduction. He's joining us from a studio at Claremont there. And Patrick Mason, welcome back to you.
Great to be with you, Doug.
So we wanted to have you on the program, Patrick, to talk a little bit about this question that's been coming up about how a lay minister is supposed to handle questions like this without the training, and the training question comes into play. And it seems like to really understand the full context of the story, you have to understand how it is that, you know, a roofing contractor or an insurance agent or a corporate lawyer ends up leading a flock and conducting interviews that can be incredibly delicate. But this idea of a lay ministry, Patrick, say something about this, because you've called it an integral feature of the faith.
Absolutely. I mean, it goes back to the very origins of the faith, and which, of course, started in early 19th century America. This was the age of Jackson. This was an age in which people believed in the power of democratic ideology and the power of individuals, that you didn't need experts or other people who had been trained professionally in various ways, that especially when it came to religion, that ordinary people equipped with the ability to read the Word of God in the Bible or the Book of Mormon, and then endowed with the Holy Spirit, the revelations that they received from God, that was all they needed to know. Yeah. And so Mormonism didn't begin with a professional class of ordained clergy. And even while other religious movements that started at the same time with the same impulse, many of them have moved towards professional training and ordination for their clergy, the LDS Church has stuck by that original ideal.
Wait, so are you saying because they're so tied to this idea of a lay ministry of, as you say, flattening out the idea, democratizing the idea, that they might even be resistant to the idea of too much training for their leaders?
Well, I think we've seen that historically. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any real move towards that. And in fact, there has been consistent suspicion of a kind of theological class within Mormonism. Of course, one of the bedrock principles of the faith is that God leads the church through revelation. And there's oftentimes a belief that too much learning can actually get in the way of God speaking to a person or a leader. That's not always the case. Of course, I mean, the church values education very much at the same time. But in terms of its ministry, it has stuck to this idea of a lay, an entirely lay, even at the general level. General authorities don't receive any formal training the same way that clergy members in other faiths would. So this goes all the way up. The men who lead the church, and it is still an all-male priesthood, are given a lot of tools in terms of ecclesiastical training, but they have so much on their plate, and most of them, especially at the local level, are working their day jobs, as you said, as a roofing contractor or a lawyer or something like that. And so they're doing this on top of all of that, and there's so much on their plate. And so where would be the time and the bandwidth for the kind of training that you would need to handle these kinds of interviews with the sensitivity and professionalism that we've been talking about?
But is this sustainable, do you think? I mean, you're hearing, you know, a petition has been brought by a, you know, a former bishop and an active Latter-day Saint. You're getting all of these questions. We're obviously talking about it today. Is it sustainable that the church could resist this kind of training? And do you think in some ways they might, if not give in to the petition, which I doubt that they would do publicly, at least concede we need to deal with this delicate question in a different way?
Sure. I mean, the church changes and refines its policies all the time. And so it wouldn't be that difficult for them to change on this score. And they have, as Kristen pointed out, they've implemented a series of protocols to protect children in a variety of other ways, with these bishops' interviews being the exception. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if they were responsive to this cultural moment and to the stories that they're hearing from their own members.
Kristen, maybe say something, if you would, how you see this idea of a lay ministry. Do you feel conflicted about it? You see the good parts, and then obviously you see the not-so-good parts.
I do. I see the good parts. I can hear all of that. I think that there's value in having someone help you develop your spiritual health, and that anybody, you don't need power, you don't need wealth, you don't need, can do that. However, when Patrick is saying, where do they have the time? These are issues that shape people's lives and impact them forever. Regarding sexual health, I know that most often the training is coming from LDS Family Services and their training, where there is bishop's training. And currently, you cannot practice sex therapy at LDS Family Services. So I'm really curious what that looks like. And
wait, explain that. They talk about sex related to morality. They don't talk about the healthy part of sexual relationships.
Not to my knowledge. Yeah. Not to my knowledge. And so I look at it and go, okay, I can respect you have day jobs, and I can respect that this is a voluntary position. So with that said, with the greater implications of this on someone's life, where shame can impact them forever. It impacts marriages, impacts. You've heard the stories. Let's not ask about sex then. If we don't have the training in place, there's not the bandwidth.
Just don't do it.
Then in my wildest fantasy, there'd be the boundary of, you know what? This is a great question. You should go to our sex ed Sunday school this next hour. Let's do that.
I can't believe we've gotten to 45 minutes into the program without me asking this question. Patrick, I'll put it to you and Kristen, at least to sort of work through as well. Why have men do these interviews with young girls anyway? Why can't women leaders in Mormonism ask these questions? Patrick, is there a prohibition for something like that? Could there be a way for something like that to actually happen?
Oh, there could be, because, I mean, the church could always change and develop. But the reason why it exists in the way that it does is the church's own understanding of its ecclesiastical structure. Bishops, one of the other titles or terms for them, and this is in LDS scripture, is that they are quote-unquote judges in Israel, that they, as part of their calling, as part of what they are ordained to do, it's to essentially to assess and evaluate, to judge the spiritual worthiness of the members of their congregation, especially for key things that, you know, the church polices boundaries. This is what it does morally, and it especially polices moral boundaries around priesthood ordination, which, of course, is still only reserved for men, but also entrance to the temples, and that's for men and women. And so right now in the church's ecclesiology, bishops do have a special and unique role by virtue of their ordination by which they can judge people's worthiness. Bishops' counselors can't do this. The Relief Society president, the senior female authority in a ward, can't do this. Right now, it's only in the hands of the bishop. Could that change? Of course it could. But right now, there actually is a theological rationale for why bishops have a special privilege in asking these kinds of questions.
Do you see what you're up against, Kristen?
I do. I sit here and I'm just like, I don't want to say I'm a bit speechless, but I just look at the challenge and I go, okay, let's just pull the Relief Society president in then with the bishop. That could be a first start. I think there's more nuanced solutions that we could start problem solving around.
801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. Let's take a few more phone calls. Let's go to Jennifer, who's in Utah County. Jennifer, welcome.
Oh, hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I feel like the woman that you have on that's saying that she just has a rule in her house to not have her children in these meetings is so great. And I applaud you for that, because as a child, you know, I remember these meetings and being humiliated and embarrassed. And as a girl, you feel already on the spot with your body developing, and then you have this grown man asking you these private questions, and it is very creepy. And I think that these kinds of questions shouldn't be eliminated just for children, but I think that for adults should not be having to answer these types of questions either. That's my comment. Thanks.
Kristen's aggressively nodding her head. Explain that. I mean, this question should be off limits. Just, we should shift even for the grown-ups, right?
Yes, there was actually a piece in the Exponent that went around called Virginal Sex.
And explain what the Exponent is. For
it's a women's magazine,
yeah, okay.
LDS publication. However, she had an experience when she was newly married and was aroused and touched her body, and her first step was, oh no, I've done something wrong. Confessed to her husband. And then her husband's wow. like, oh, you should talk to the bishop. Went and talked to the bishop, and the sacrament was withheld. And there was this conversation instead of a boundary of, oh, actually, that's not my role. This is for you and your husband. This is yours. This is your bedroom. You get to be the stewards over your sexual relationship, and being able to redirect it and put that there in a non-shaming way. And again, set that boundary. And
so
he
did it right, this guy.
No, I'm saying that's what I wished would have happened.
Oh,
she was put on
right,
probation.
Right.
Not probation, I'm sorry.
No, she wasn't allowed to take the sacrament.
Correct.
Which is
and that's what I look at too, yes, with okay. these kids that are asked. And if sacrament's withheld, there's just not too many things you can do as a 12-year-old where you're not taking the sacrament or you can't pass the sacrament. And yeah. So there's the kind of the scarlet letter.
Patrick, how do you deal with that question? If you are, as you put it, a judge in Israel, and now all of a sudden the rule is we're going to take sex off of the list of things that you're able to really talk about or judge, that seems like impossible, almost, given the, at least the context for it now.
Yeah, that would really be – that would constitute a really kind of a theological revolution within the church in term – because the church – there are many ways to talk about morality, but for this is a long tradition within Christianity and other religions that morality is defined in part by way of sexuality and the practice, the way that a person practices sex. And so, I mean, Jesus had things to say about this in the New Testament. This is not exclusively an LDS issue. Yeah. And so for the church to say we are interested in judging in some way who is in and who is out, or, you know, in patrolling these boundaries or saying who is quote-unquote worthy to enter into our most sacred spaces, which represent the presence of God. But by the way, we're going to put human sexuality out of that. So I hear what Kristen is saying in terms of saying there's a differentiation between the moral aspects and the health aspects. Well, the church is heavily, heavily invested in sex as a moral proposition.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's almost inconceivable to me, given the church's sacred texts, its tradition, the broad tradition of 2,000 years of Christianity, to separate sex out of the moral question is almost inconceivable. I think there are better ways to handle it, and so I think that's where the conversation would be most productive, to think about how do you actually navigate these things while keeping sexuality within the conversation about morality.
Kristen's asking me to read something which I can't read. Say it. What is the question? Because there's a question that you're...
To your point, Patrick, I think, because I respect the moral piece, and so I look and go, can't we create a both-and situation where we are empowered in both our values and our morality and our God-given sexuality, instead of it being a mutually exclusive? Could there be room to merge these two ideas and make it actually a more positive thing, so that as kids are developing, they feel they're excited, they're learning about the capacity of their body, and they're feeling excited to save this for marriage? I think that can be a both and, but we need to shift the conversation.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's just a huge lacuna there, that there's no Mormon sexual ethic, right? Mm. It's all about do's and don'ts. It's not actually a kind of healthy, productive conversation about how do we think about the ethics of human sexuality.
Mm-hmm. All right. We need to get to a break here. Let me read a couple of comments. Karen writes, I'm not LDS and in total agreement with the inappropriateness of the discussions described in the program today. However, I do wonder what young people are encouraged to do if they're experiencing abuse in home. That's another thing that we could probably do a whole hour on. Carla writes, having the father sit down on interviews is all well and good, except there are fathers who are molesting their daughters, of course. No way a girl's going to open up with dad in there. That question of abuse comes up again. And this from Stephen, who writes, Mormons don't have the corner on the market of sexual questions. I grew up Catholic. We as young boys had to inform the priest during confession if we had masturbated and how many times. Penance and absolution were then granted. I'm now an atheist, said Stephen. 801-585 West, the number to join the conversation. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Patrick Mason is with us, an historian and the Howard W. Hunter Chair of Mormon Studies at Claremont Graduate University in California. And Kristen Hodson with us, an LDS therapist, director of the Healing Group. We'll take a quick break and come back for some final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
Each morning as you drive the kids to school, KUER's Radio West team is preparing a new conversation that explores the way the world works. They connect with scholars, authors, and interesting people, and delve into the questions that bring context and understanding, so that when 9 o'clock rolls around, you can spend an hour expanding your mind and heart. Trusted voices, powered by you. Support Radio West today at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we've been talking about these interviews in the LDS Church between adult men and young people, young boys, young girls. Sometimes the interviews are, you know, for comfort and counsel. A lot of times, though, they deal with sex, and that has become a problem. There's a petition asking the church to stop these interviews, and so we've been discussing it with Kristen Hodson, an LDS therapist, director of the Healing Group in Salt Lake City, Patrick Mason, an historian and Mormon scholar from Claremont Graduate University in California, joining us. Let's go back to the phones. I think we have Grant back with us. Grant, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Yes, thanks. Go ahead.
Well, when I was 34 years old, I already had a psychology degree, and I was made a bishop. And I have conducted several of these interviews that you've been talking about. And now that it's over, I'm still an active member of the church, but I feel personally traumatized and that I may have traumatized someone. And I'm wondering what I can do to help myself and maybe reach out to others and apologize or make amends with them for any harm I might have caused.
I'm not sure if you have an answer, Kristen, but it's a kind of a poignant question, isn't it?
In my heart, I always feel massive empathy for bishops. They carry a lot. They hear a lot. And I think, I mean, my first go-to is always going to be like, take a moment and go see a counselor and potentially unpack this and see if there's resolution that feels right and resonates for you on how you help both yourself and potentially make amends where you feel like you may have gone off.
We don't have a lot of time. I want to get to some final thoughts here in just a moment. Let me mention a caller from Salt Lake City, Alex, mentioning her mother was molested by her father, comforted by the bishop directly with the father in the room without disclosing it to the police after she's left the church, this idea of disclosure, although the church is very clear about that. They require that. We should make that. Doesn't always happen. Sarah from Orem calling in to say as a child she was sexually abused. It wasn't something she could say. When she was asked the question, she had a very difficult time figuring out how to answer. And then, of course, the damage that was caused by all of that. You've got all of these things to work out. Let me just come around to this question since we're essentially out of time. And Patrick, I'll put it to you first. Kristen mentioned Russell Ballard admitting they're not authorities in general. They don't have all of the answers. Are you seeing a little bit of movement or maybe in a likelihood to evolve on this matter?
Absolutely, and I see that as a really welcome change. In the past, I think some of the rhetoric has been that they were authorities about everything. But now there's a kind of greater humility and circumspection about the scope of their authority and recognizing that there is expertise out there that they don't hold. So I see that as a really positive development in this area and many others.
You feel hopeful, Kristen?
I do. When I heard that, I thought that was a wonderful change as well.
Kristen Hodson, an LDS therapist, director of the Healing Group in Salt Lake City, co-author of the book Real Intimacy, joined us here in the studio. Glad to have you back. Thanks for
Thank you for
us.
Having me.
And Patrick Mason, an historian, the Howard W. Hunter Chair of Mormon Studies at Claremont Graduate University in California. His latest book is What is Mormonism? A Student's Introduction. He joined us from the studio at Claremont. Patrick, glad to have you back. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Doug.
And thanks for all of those who contributed to the program. You can join us at radiowest.org if you have more comments. Radio West is a production of KUER, technical direction from Tim Slover, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.